I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Chad from San Diego.
All right. Thank you, everyone. My name is Chad, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to get this a little higher first. There we go. Thank you. Okay. Can you hear me? All right, thank you. I'd like to thank my friend Joe for calling me out here to speak at this meeting. Joe and I used to work together at TGI Fridays, of all places, 7 years ago. I was a waiter, and he was a busboy, and we became friends, and then I ran into him at a meeting, and here I am. And so thank you, Joe, for calling me out. I appreciate it. And I'd also like to say that this is my first time as a main speaker. And so I thought there'd be no better way than to do it in front of a room of 300 people. 200 people. So my sobriety date is November 12th, 2005. My home group is No Ifs, Ands, or Buts. It's up in Escondido. And my sponsor is Bob P. I'd like to start off by saying that, I really believe this is a family disease. It runs in my family. My great-grandfather had it, and apparently he spoke with Bill W. back in the 40s. My grandma had it, and she passed away in 1998. My father has it, I have it, and my brother has it. And so I truly believe this is a genetically passed-on disease that afflicts many families, and, it certainly afflicts our family. My brother, he's still out there struggling. He's been struggling. I know some of you know him probably in this room. He's been struggling for 10 years. He's been in and out of these rooms over and over and over again. I think at the last tally, he's been to 27 different San Diego rehabs. I think I like to keep it in perspective, and I feel very grateful to be here that I was able to attain sobriety, long-term sobriety, and I feel like it's a gift because a lot of people don't make it. And so, I want to give you guys a backdrop, kind of talk about my life growing up and set the tone for the chaos that followed after that. I grew up on the mean streets, the mean thuggish streets of Rancho Bernardo, up in thug life up there, baby, let me tell you. I remember growing up in a good household. My father, he's a physician. My mother was a stay-at-home housewife. They're both sitting in the front row here. growing up, I just remember having a good upbringing, going out with friends, riding my bike around town, going down to the local swim and tennis club. I had a lot of friends. We played sports, growing up, going playing baseball, soccer, football, all these sports and everything. And there was our household on the outside on paper looked really great. But there was one small problem. Alcoholism runs in our family, and my dad was a practicing in his disease at that time, and so our family had a little bit of dysfunction, to say the least, and there was a lot of stuff going on behind closed doors that nobody knew about, and substance abuse and this and that, and so that's what was going on as a youth growing up, and that's how I kind of grew up. Except I didn't really know it. I didn't really know what was going on at all. I just thought that was, the normal family thing. And so my dad was pretty slick at hiding what he was doing and nobody knew, but he was a practicing, he was in his disease. And so that led to a lot of dysfunction in the family. That was all fine and dandy, but he got sober in 1988. My father got sober in 1988. I remember he came to the family. And he told us what he had been doing. We were kind of shocked, and we were very forgiving. And immediately, you know, immediately after he come to the family and we kind of went through some, you know, some therapy and some group, you know, going to see, you know, psychiatrists and this and that, you know, everything seemed to settle down for maybe 6 months. And that was about the time that I started with my shenanigans. 19, I was young. And you know, I really think that I was an awful, awful kid. I was just a bad kid for my parents. I was a disrespectful. I had no respect for authority. I grew up kind of angry. And, you know, this was all before I ever took a drink. You know, I was 12 years old, I remember. And something happened inside me. And I started just becoming very angry, withdrawn from society, from friends, just kind of, you know, it was really hard to handle. I wouldn't do anything my parents told me. And I remember, this might be a shock to my parents, but we used to have this club. We would steal our parents' cars at like seventh grade. We'd all make copies of their keys, and we'd go drive around San Diego at like 2 a.m. in seventh grade. They didn't know there's a group of like a dozen kids, and I don't know what the hell we were thinking. We used to have to use booster seats to sit on the seats so that we could drive around San Diego. And I don't think they ever knew that. Well, you know now, so. and like I said, this was all before I started drinking. So I just tell you this to kind of put it in perspective that I was, I think I did pretty well in the beginning. And then somewhere in middle school, I kind of derailed. And I didn't get back on those rails for a long time, which you'll hear later on. But so let me just get organized here. Okay, we're up to seventh grade now. So I'm in seventh grade. I'm angry. I'm a wayward youth. I'm already committing crimes, and I have no respect for authority. And then, you know, I start smoking cigarettes and doing all this other crap. And my parents, God bless them, they were dealing with some serious, like, I was just uncontrollable. And I have two kids of my own now, and one of them's 10, and I really hope he doesn't pay me back for the stuff I did. The other one's 2, he's playing in the little playroom back there. But, so in seventh grade, I was an angry, wayward youth. And I just became so combative with my parents and so angry that they decided they're gonna stick me in a place called Rancho Park Mental Institution, it's a mental institution. So it's a behavior modification program. And so I was there for 5 weeks or something like this. And I remember I just wanted to show how badass I was. So I challenged the staff and I grabbed pencils and tried to act like I was tough, and they rushed me with mats and they kicked my ass and tied me to a frickin', you know, like tied me up 4 corners, and put me in this room and everything. And I fought it for a while, and then I kind of adapted, and I figured out what to tell. I figured out what to tell the shrinks and the psychiatrists and the therapists, you know, what they wanted to know so I could get out of this program. And so you know, I was there for 4 weeks, and then I got out, and I had to go to this outpatient thing, I remember. And once again, this is all before I picked up a drink. So once you throw alcohol in, this is a total disaster for me. So I got out of there, and I tried to go back to school. I tried to go back to middle school, and this is about the time where I took my first drink, age 13, I think. And so it was 12 or 13 where three friends and I, we went to a church, and they had a 24-pack of Budweiser in the cooler there. And I don't know why the church, this is a rowdy church, I think. So they were, so we had about 8 beers each. And I remember those drinks as if it was, I really remember it as if it was yesterday. I remember the feeling of it going down my throat, the warmness that came over my body. And I thought to myself, you know what? This is what I'm going to be doing for the foreseeable future. I've found something that's making me feel great. You know, I have all these other problems, but when I'm drunk and I'm, you know, I hadn't gotten high yet, but I'm feeling really good. And I really enjoyed the way that the alcohol made me feel. And so, now with that in the mix, I think there was a compound effect. And with the anger and the, the lack of respect for authority and all of these things, I became completely out of control. I started skipping school. I wouldn't go to school. I wouldn't listen to my parents. I kind of did whatever the hell I wanted. I snuck out of the house at night. I was just a nightmare. And age 13, I think the sixth time I drank, a couple friends and I, we decided to skip school and go drink at my buddy's house at like 9 a.m. And one of us came up with a brilliant idea to walk to North County Fair, the mall over there in North County. And we started walking to the mall, and a police officer pulled over, saw what we were doing, and he ended up taking us to the middle school, and we all got expelled. We all got sent to different schools. And so so that was one of the first real, repercussions I had from drinking. And that was the first of a long line of many. So here I am at age 13, at this point in my life. All I care about is drinking, and now we're talking about smoking pot. Now I'm smoking pot and drinking. Pretty much, that's my main goal in life. I'd found what I want to do, and I really enjoyed doing that. And so, I wasn't getting any better. And so my parents, they made a contract with me, and they told me, if you do one more thing, we're going to send your ass up to a boarding school in Northern California. And so, probably 2 weeks later, I did one more thing, and I was. I believe it was, I got caught smoking a cigarette. Somebody snitched on me. One of my parents' friends saw me. They saw me smoking a cigarette. They called my parents, and that was like the contract I had broken. And so I remember when they took me, they tricked me. They told me, get in the car, we're taking you to school. So I go get in the car, and it's a rental car, and has those childproof locks in the back. All of a sudden, my uncle comes walking around the corner. Mind you, he lives in Los Angeles. And I'm like, what's Uncle Dave doing here? He gets in the back. My dad gets in the back. They bust out some handcuffs. They're like, you're going up to freaking... I went, because they knew that I was just a rebellious kid. So they handcuffed me, and they took me up to this boarding school up in the Cascade Mountains. And so I was up there in the Cascade Mountains, and, my first inclination was to... concoct a plan to escape, and that's exactly what I did. Me and my friend and I, we met up, and we decided we were going to run away. So we packed up a bunch of stuff in one of those like little sacks with the wood thing with the sack on the back, and we started hiking through the Cascade Mountains. And I remember sleeping out in the 14 degree weather on the side of the freeway, and I remember that I just wanted to get back to San Diego. I wanted to get inebriated. I wanted to get drunk. I wanted to get high. I didn't want to be in a place away from my friends and my family. And we hitchhiked all the way down from Redding all the way down to San Diego in about 3 days. At age 13, I did this. And as soon as we got back, I went to my friend's house, and his mom called my parents, and they came over with a couple deputies, and they took me back up to the... They woke me up at 6 in the morning, and they said, you're going back. And so... Only this time they stuck me in the Utah desert in a wilderness camp. And so I was in the Utah desert for 6 weeks. And this was a deal where you hike around. It's a team building thing. I know a lot of wayward youth have probably gone on this. It was actually a lot of fun. You run around, eat astronaut food, and you go camping, and you go rock climbing, and you really learn, the how to be a man. But, And I enjoyed doing that, and it was fun. But I still wasn't ready for, I wasn't ready to change my ways. I was still just this rebellious, punk kid that didn't want to do anything, didn't want to go to school, just wanted to hang out with my loser friends and do a bunch of drugs and alcohol and not do anything and commit crimes and do all these things. And so, after I went to the Wilderness Conquest, they sent me back to that Cascade school, and I ran away again, and they took me to a place called Secret Harbor. It was an island up in, they stuck me on an island up in the Puget Sound up in, Washington State. There is no escaping from the island, trust me. That's it, man. And so I'm on the island for 2 years, okay? Yeah, and this place was hardcore. If you did anything wrong, they'd make you dig a ditch like 50 feet long, 3 feet wide, and 2 feet deep, and then fill it back in. And yeah, so they were hardcore. And so I was there for 2 years. I fought that system for a while. I remember I didn't want to be there. But I got keen to the system, and I did well. And after about a year, I got transferred to the town, Anacortes, Washington, to the town, to a transition house. And in that transition house, I was able to go to the public high school, and I had a lot of freedom. And I was in ninth grade, I remember. My drinking and drug use just skyrocketed there. I was doing the same old stuff, you know, the same old things were coming up. I looked for the same people I was looking for in San Diego. I found the same people that I had in San Diego, you know, all the people that hang out across this high school and smoke cigarettes at high school, and they're the ones I went and hung out with because I know they're doing the same stuff that I want to do. And I'm skipping school. I'm not going to school. I'm getting high every day. I'm drinking whenever I can find it. Mind you, I'm 14 years old. And within, I think, a few months, that school said, get this guy the hell out of here. He never shows up. He comes in high. And here I am at 14. Now I'm kicked out of, like, second or third school in a row. And I remember my parents were pissed because I think they spent a lot of money to put me there. And they called and they said, you know, we're sorry. We can't help this kid. We tried everything for 2 years. And, you know, he's going to get a dishonorable discharge. And so my parents had to fly me back to San Diego and, you know, with nothing really to show for it, except now that I'm older and I'm bigger and I'm, I looked like I was 19 when I was 14. So I could get away with a lot of things. And, so I came back to Rancho Bernardo and this is when I was 14 years old. And I really wanted to do well. I wanted to try to make everyone proud. I wanted to go to school. I wanted to do all these great things and do well. Because, you know, just a little background. One of my brothers is an alcoholic. The other one is a doctor. And he's like Mr. Perfect. He's always been Mr. Perfect. Best at every sports. All has the best friends, best grades, all these things. And he's not afflicted with alcoholism. And so, you know, I always tell my parents, one out of three is not bad. So... And so I really wanted to kind of do what he's doing, and even though I'm the oldest in the family, I want to do what my middle brother's doing and try to do well and get back and figure out how to do well. And so I came back, and I sat down with the principal of the school, and they told me, you know, if you want to play football, you need to get your grades up and all this stuff. And so I did well for about 3 or 4 months. I remember I did pretty well. I got my grades up, and I did what I knew I could do if I stayed sober, but you know, it only lasted like 4 months, and I fell in with the same people, and I was doing the same things, and you know, I was at this point taking acid and doing you know, marijuana and drinking all the time, going to keg parties at high school, and just trying to figure out where all the parties were all the time, and not caring about school, not caring about my parents, and so I got kicked out of that school, and it wasn't shortly after that I started getting arrested for crimes from juvenile hall type stuff, going to jail first thing was driving drunk on a moped, and I got in a fight with a police officer, and I remember he smashed my head on the front of the hood and knocked my tooth out. So I mean, that was at age 14, and so I got arrested. I went to juvenile hall, and you know, I didn't get any better. It only got worse. I just kept doing the same thing over and over again. The crimes were getting more, and then I came up with this. I was such a bully and such a jerk that a bunch of dudes paid me money to go like punch this kid in the nose, and I punched him in the nose, and now I got a felony, and so the cops were looking for me in San Diego, and so I ran away to L.A. at age 15. I took off. My friend put me up in this room, and I'm living in L.A. in this little crappy room by myself, away from my family, away from everyone, working at a telemarketing job. And my plan was I'm going to stay on the run until I'm 18 because they can't do anything once I turn 18. And, you know, that didn't last very long. I stole a motorcycle, and I tried to drive it around for 3 days, and then I got arrested on it. And this time the juvenile authorities, because I had been arrested so many times, they sent me to another place called Vision Quest. And I don't know if any of you heard of that, but it's a CYA alternative program. It's in the Arizona desert, and I was living in teepees in the Arizona desert. It's like a Native American base, and it's really spiritual. And but they would kick our ass out there. I don't know. Back in the early 90s, I think they were allowed to do that because they would fucking hurt us. I swear, they would smash your face into the desert sand and rub your face all into the dirt, and it was brutal, man. I think one of them got shut down. Like, kids were dying there, and this is the place I was at. It was no joke, man. I got in a lot of confrontations with these staff, and they would put a hurt on us. I remember that. And I remember that place. Brutal. Plus, it was 120 degrees every day. So that's probably why they hurt us. They're so friggin' hot and irritated that they figure they take it out on the kids. And so here I am again in a place, and, you know, the whole time, you know, I didn't really have a chance to develop my disease because I was always incarcerated and in different institution, you know. I knew, my dad told me I was likely an alcoholic. He's a recovering alcoholic. He said, you're not going to be able to drink like a normal person. And I obviously when you're 15 years old, you're probably, you know, I was thinking, there's no way I'm going to become, you know, I'm not going to get sober right now. And so here's what happened. I got out of Vision Quest, and at this point I'm 18, and I'm still not ready to get clean and sober. And my parents quickly saw that, and they kicked me out, and I went and lived with some buddies in Escondido, and I got a fake ID, and then I was able to develop my disease big time. I was able to get beer all the time. I was able to, you know, I started selling drugs, and whatever I could sell, I was selling it, and I was going to parties, and I was, you know, I was trying to do community college, I was trying to go to school, and my grades were just crap. I kept failing out, getting D's, and not really doing anything with school, and my alcoholism was really coming full force. I remember drinking every day, I remember smoking pot every day, I remember taking all sorts of other stuff, and all that stuff kind of started gradually getting, you know, more and more harder drugs and this and that, like I'm sure many of us know. And you know, I worked several different waiter jobs. I remember thinking to myself at one point at age 20, I can't remember the last time I didn't drink. I tried to think back to the last day I didn't drink, and I couldn't do it. I mean, it had been so many days in a row. And I was such an unreliable guy. I was, you know, like nobody could count on me for anything. I got fired from every single job I had, and there was all due to alcoholism. It was all due to not showing up for work, calling out sick, coming into work screwed up, and you know, I'd gotten arrested. You know, I calmed down a little bit with the anger and the lack of respect for authority. This time, I was more into partying and kind of wasn't so like you know, screw the police or everything. But I did get a couple of DUIs in that point, a drunk in public, and a couple other arrests. I'm gonna tell you about. I know this is an AA meeting, but I want to quickly tell you what expedited my downfall. You know, I did. I started at age 23. I started doing meth, and that stuff. You know, I don't know if any of you've ever done that, or you know, I'm sure plenty of you have. Talk about an F5 tornado just going through your life and just completely ruining everything in your life. I mean, I'm not going to go into details, but, you know, within five years, I had four or five felony convictions. I had been to 10 different San Diego rehabilitation centers. I lost everything that I had. I had lost my house. I lost everything. Everything. I had nothing. I was living in my car, and I had been several times in jail, and I'd gone to jail several times, been to CRASH, the rehab CRASH, and Fellowship Center, and all these other different rehabs, and I didn't want to get sober, and I was enthralled with this lifestyle, and I wanted to keep going, and I didn't know what was going to, you know, allow me to stop, and so What allowed me to stop, I believe, what happened for me was I was finally sent to state prison, and I went to prison for 2 years. It's like, finally somebody did something with your ass, huh? Get me off the streets, yeah. So I went to prison, and I think that was the kind of the catalyst that got me thinking about getting sober. You know, my life was just one screw up after another from age 13 to age 27. Here I was at 27, sitting there in Donovan prison, thinking to myself, what the hell has happened to me? My brother's in med school. My other cousins are going to all these great schools, buying homes, getting married, you know, doing all these great things. And I'm sitting in a prison cell, and I was just thinking, you know, what the hell am I going to do with my life? It's either continue the route I'm going and I'll end up dead, or one of these guys is just in and out of prison his whole life, or, you know, I don't know. There's no life for me doing that. And I'd like to tell you that, you know, I had a lot of time to think about it, and I really wanted to stop what I was doing. And so when I got out of prison, I did slip. I had one slip on the weekend of November 12, 2005. In a moment of weakness, I went out with a friend and I did some stuff for the weekend. But I've been sober since November 12, 2005. That was the last time that I have picked up anything. And what it's like, it's... Thank you. What it was like is I got out of there, I had nothing. I had like $20 in my name. I had a bicycle. I had no license. I had the DUI program I had to do. I was living in a Serenity Palms, sober living in Escondido. I got a job at 7-Eleven, and I rode my bike around to the gym, to the meetings, to everywhere for a year until I slowly started picking up the pieces of my life. And I don't know if it was a spiritual experience that got me sober. It was because I was, after I relapsed, I was white-knuckling it for about 2 weeks. And I stayed the course. I stayed in the meetings, and I kept going to meetings. And slowly but surely, that obsession started going away. And, you know, things started getting a lot better for me. I got a good group of guys in AA that I met up there. I had a great sponsor. I had a great home group that I went to with my dad. You know, he's been going there for 27 years, and he introduced me to all the guys there, and they're still good friends of mine to this day. And I was able to do things in sobriety that I never thought I'd be able to do in my life. You know, I was just born to lose my whole life, and you know, I never knew that getting sober could change so many things in my life. I really didn't. I was able to, get my license back, start paying off all the debts that I owed, rebuild a relationship with my family. I was tested early on in sobriety. I failed to mention this, but when I went to prison, the girl that I was running around with at the time, the mother of my first child, we both went to prison. He was born from prison. They took him out of prison and he was born. And I didn't meet him until he was 11 months old. And it was kind of a weird situation, you know. I didn't really want to be with this girl, and it was just kind of weird. And, you know, she did well the first 2 years, but then she went back to drugs and alcohol when I had about 2 years of sobriety. And she went back big time. She ended up getting 6 years in prison. And so I had to quickly step up, get full custody of my now two-year-old, and try to figure out what I was going to do with this kid. I was a single father. Luckily, my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, she was there to help me out. My parents were there to help me out. My mother-in-law was there to help me out. And we made it work. And I don't know what would have happened. You know, if I had kept doing what I was doing, my poor son, he would be, who knows where he would be. He would be living with grandparents, and he'd be, you know, all this stuff. And so I was able to actually go to court and get full custody of him. I flash forward, she got out of prison. She's doing really well now. She's back in his life. So that's a good thing as well. And so early on in sobriety, I was, tested with that. And I want to get to the, and only I have 10 minutes left. So I'm going to get to the, just keep moving on. So I decided to, well, first of all, TGI Fridays not only brought me my friend Joe, but it brought me my wife right here because I met her at TGI Fridays. So TGI Fridays was a great friggin' job for me. I met my wife, my girlfriend in 2007, and, you know, we just slowly and surely built a life together. We now have two beautiful boys. And I said in my vows I was going to get her a house with a white picket fence. As soon as I get a job, I'm going to get her a house with a white picket fence. As soon as I get a job where I can buy a house, I'm going to get her the white picket fence. You know, I slowly but surely put my life together. I paid off all my debts. I made amends. I started working the steps. I had a sponsor. I had a home group. I really put in the work to go to meetings, you know. I had commitments in the beginning, you know. I still do. You know, coffee commitments, because I really believe that helps. When you have to go to a commitment and you have to get up and go early, you know, you're going to meet people and you're going to become assimilated into the group, and you're going to meet a bunch of people and really feel more welcome in AA. I was younger back then. I'm 38, but there's a lot of young people. I was in some of the young people meetings, you know, the young people events, the icky paw, the wacky paw, and all those things. And so that really helped me out because I didn't have any friends when I got sober. I mean, all my friends were doing that, all the stuff. I didn't want to hang out with them anymore. And so I had to meet a whole group of new friends. I went back to school. And I was able to get really good grades. I never thought I could get good grades. You know, I was always just such a screw up that I'd never studied or did anything. And I went back to Cal State San Marcos and I graduated in 2010. And then shortly after that, I decided, you know what, I'm going to go to law school. And I ended up getting into a law school in North Carolina. And I did really well in that law school and I got to transfer to Pepperdine University School of Law. And I just graduated in May from Pepperdine University School of Law. And I passed the bar that I found out last month. I passed the bar. So, I mean, the transformation and the miracles that happened in this program are unbelievable. Many of you might think, how the hell can this guy be an attorney with all these freaking criminal charges, right? But, you know, you can. You can. I want to tell you, you can become an attorney even if you've been to prison. It doesn't matter. There's no hard, fast rule that says you can't be an attorney. You just have to show overwhelming rehabilitation, which I'm hoping I have. I don't have my license yet. I have to go meet with the State Bar of California as soon as they call me. They're supposed to call me, and I'm supposed to go up there and plead my case. And I'm really hoping and praying that they give me my license because I've passed all the other stuff. And, you know, I thought to myself, you know, I'm not going to be able to do this because I have so many criminal convictions and this and that. But I did go through and I got all of them expunged. I got a certificate of rehabilitation. I have a completely clear record today. And, it was a long road. It was a long road and it was a lot of work. But, you know what? I'm so glad that I did it. And today, my life today is something I never could have dreamed of. You know, I have my wife, my beautiful wife, my two beautiful children. I'm just a worker among workers, like they say in the book. I just do my thing, get a job, pay my taxes, and stay the hell out of other people's business and stay the hell away from the police. And, you know, I don't have to worry about any of that stuff. And I'm really excited about my life. I'm optimistic about my life. And I'm really grateful that I've had the opportunity to come here and share my story with you guys. And thank you so much. Wow.